Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Compulsive Reader Talks. I'm Magdalena Ball, and today's guest is Jay Ford, author of, among many other things, Blood Secret. Jay, welcome.
Thanks, Maggie.
Now, before we begin chatting, can I ask you to just read to us a little bit from Blood Secret, just to give us a taste?
Sure. I've chosen a piece which is about halfway through, which is hopefully not too long, but it just talks a little bit about Rennie, who's the main character of this story. So I'll just start now. She moved restlessly about the house, not searching now but staying busy, feeling as though the adrenaline that had been cooling inside her since Saturday night would start leaking out her pores if she didn't get rid of it. If she went for a run, she could take another look around for signs of Max, do a little reconnaissance at the same time. She pulled on shoes, tied back her hair, zipped both mobile phones into the pockets of her running pants and checked Hayden was still asleep. 5 minutes later, she'd locked the doors behind her and was turning left at the lake's edge, the water smooth and deep green like an enormous sheet of opaque glass. She thought again about Max's detour on the way to the party. Was it the lure of the sunset or a last look before he left? Shaking it off, she focused on more reassuring things, the beat of her stride, the rhythm of her breath. Rennie was born with a built-in capacity to run. As a small, skinny kid, she'd done everything at a trot, going to the car, to the shops, down the road, around the park. It drove Joanne crazy. Her mother had watched with distaste, seeing only her father's jeans in it. She'd finished a couple of school cross-country events so far ahead of the pack she thought she'd taken a wrong turn. A teacher once accused her of cheating. Others got stars in their eyes about rep teams and trophies, but Rennie was never in one place long enough to achieve any of that. At the roundabout where the four-wheel drive had cut them off, the grassy path at the water's edge narrowed to nothing. Rennie stepped onto the roadway, feeling the hard surface in her shins, and ran along the outside edge of the two-lane strip of bitumen, facing any oncoming traffic, the short drop to the water at her side. The kid had tailgated them along this stretch, swerving into the lane that was now her running track. She alternated a gaze between the road and the water, searching for anything that looked like it had come from Max. Watch, wallet, shoe, a scrap of fabric from his clothes. The only way something like that would get there was if he'd been scrambling around the rocks or his belongings had been thrown from the car. It fit her father-released scenario and the one with the kid in the four-wheel drive, not the version where Max had left her. As her eyes moved in a side-to-side pattern and her legs counted the rhythm for her breath, she thought of other roads she'd run with awareness. It was one of the lessons her mother had drilled into her. Know what belongs and what doesn't. The cones, the cars, the faces. Familiarity is a useful tool when you are hiding from a ghost. Do you want me to keep reading?
Well, it's totally up to you. I mean, it's, you know, utterly engrossing, and I just love how you're revealing Rennie, but also in many ways revealing kind of the overall character arc as well. You know, where we're starting, where we're going to go, who is this person? To me, I felt like the story wasn't so much a thriller as really Rennie's story.
Yes, definitely Rennie's story, yes. And I kind of felt that I really wanted her to start with character in one place, being just, you know, one of a girl that you met at the start of the story and perhaps, you know, in a relationship, and slowly, slowly reveal every kind of ugly thing about her life. And so that each time you learn something more, hopefully the reader kind of has to change their perspective and shift what they think about her.
Mm. And of course that's what happens with her and Max, you know, and Hayden as well. I mean, all the characters really, as they learn something more, they have to shift their perspective.
Yes, yeah, that's right, about each other and hopefully the reader as well. Yeah, it was one of the theories that I started with at the start of this book, in that I wanted everybody at the start to appear to be one thing but actually turn out to be something completely different.
Mm. Do you do that? Is that sort of a standard common theme for you in your work?
Not that necessarily. I guess if you want a common theme, it would be more about backstories for characters and slowly revealing those. So in some sense, the story is both moving forwards and backwards at the same time.
Mm. And that moving forward and backwards, I mean, that, just thinking in terms of that little passage that you read, you know, the way in which Rennie is running in her mind, the way she's always running and always observing and staying on top of things. It's almost the opposite. It's a sort of transition to stillness.
Yes, well, that's right, because in some ways in that story, she's forced to be still when really, yeah, as you say, in her mind, it's ticking over very fast. And at another time, she would have been moving and leaving and on the run. And I quite liked the idea of having to force her to stay, force her to be still when that was the last thing she would choose to do.
Mm, like transition to stillness, which is a nice paradox.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Well, so the story idea started with a real-life road rage incident. I know that. Tell me about it.
Well, it was my husband and I. We were going to our local Thai restaurant, which is, 10 minutes walk down the road, a couple of minutes in the car. And it was a Saturday evening, so it was dark. And we were kind of a kid in a four-wheel drive, a small four-wheel drive, jumped in front of us in a roundabout. Fast enough and close enough that we had to kind of put the brakes on quite quickly. And I think my husband bimped the horn and we kept going, and the kid wasn't happy about that. So he continued around the roundabout, followed us all the way to the shop, into the car park. And as we walked from the car, he pulled up in front of us and basically was trying to incite a fight over road rules. There was nothing to argue about and nothing had happened, but he just really went to town on road rules, basically, and our response was to kind of ignore it and, just say, yeah, whatever, and move on. And as he started to drive away, it was so bizarre and over the top that we started to laugh, and he saw us, slammed the car into reverse, and then, tires screeching, rubber burning, whatnot, skidded all the way back to us, and then followed us as we walked down the roadway with his bumper bar basically at the back of our legs. And to the point where we went into a bottle shop, and on the way up the driveway, he was so close behind, we really didn't know what he was going to do. He eventually left when we went into the bottle shop and started shouting and whatnot. And then afterwards, we went to the restaurant and we were waiting for our food. And my husband said, I think I'm just going to go out and check the car. And we had this conversation about, oh, no, you shouldn't do that. The kid could still be out there. He was threatening the car and making all sorts of threats. Anyway, my husband went out there and I sat in the restaurant for about 10 minutes thinking, what do I do if he doesn't come back? And fortunately, he did come back. And I thought, yeah, that's a really great start to a story. What if the guy doesn't come back? And we actually kind of spent the rest of that meal talking about how that might unfold. And most of what we talked about didn't end up in the book. But, yeah, that road rage and Max not coming back is how the story opens.
A typical writer, you're in the midst of a scary situation and you're thinking, I could use this.
Hey, I think when you write and something really flares at you like that, half of your brain is always thinking, how could that work?
Yeah. So tell me more about Rennie. She's such a tough cookie, isn't she? Did you have a model for her?
Not a model. I had inspiration from a friend, probably a few months before that road rage incident. A friend of mine told me that the name I knew her by wasn't her real name, and then kind of explained to me, just in conversation, the story of how her mother had packed bags one night and taken her and her two siblings and escaped an abusive father. And they moved to a new city. The kids were allowed to choose their own names, and they spent years just watching out for their father in fear of him. And that thought of what that would be like to kind of create a whole new identity for yourself and to, have to keep secrets even from people you love just seemed really fascinating. So that kind of stayed in my mind when I started to think about how that road rage moment might play out. And the Winnie character isn't actually anything like my friend. And she's actually read the book and she laughed and said, no, it's not like her. But that feeling of having to be safe, and I just took it that step further. So Rennie and her sister actually end up in a bad situation with the father previous to the book as part of the backstory, and I wanted that to really shape her as well. And in fact, you ask if there's like a model for her. When I was writing her, I actually found her really difficult to get a hold of because she is really controlled and restrained and remote, and I found that really hard to write. Found that I was feeling like I was kind of pushing the writing in a direction it didn't really need to go. And then when I went back to kind of flesh her out, I realized that that, in fact, is who she is. She is actually really remote. And so I kind of then worked at how to flesh her out. And that was kind of a very satisfying process, actually.
Yeah, well, I guess there's, you know, there's this lovely sort of irony in the reader, because we do know that she's not all tough. I mean, you know, you do reveal that she's struggling with her tender side and being vulnerable in that sense, which she's always fought against. So that, you know, that's kind of a little bit delicious.
Yeah, and I actually really like that about her as well, that she manages to be both things, you know, both really tough and scared and vulnerable and really kind of solid at the same time. And the both sides of her making all decisions for her when it gets really rough at the end, you know, she needs to be both of those people to do what she needs to do at the end. And I actually really like that about her.
Yes, yes. And she's a good foil for Max, too, who almost goes to the other extreme and is a little floppy.
Yeah, Bobby, I like that. Yeah, it was quite fun to write him. They had this Rennie who was so, you know, wound up and so, you know, remote and held herself so tightly. And he was, yes, floppy, as you say, but it was quite nice to have that foil for me to write this guy who was really kind of laid back and, yeah, whatever, and kind of thinking good things instead of bad things all the time, and fun for me to write the two balances. And I also felt that kind of would have made them work in a very strange way.
Yeah, because they're both a little damaged. I mean, they're both quite damaged. Do you feel in some ways, too, that the book is, one of the key themes of the book is about healing that damage, how we heal that damage?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I think in some ways this story is about what happens after a bad crime or a bad incident. The fact that there is a crime in it means that those emotions are kind of put forward in the healing process, or the damage part of those people is kind of pushed to the forefront. But in some ways it's about how do you heal from trauma and from bad decisions and from things that you wish that you hadn't done. And part of it is about finding the right reasons to move forward in the right way.
Mm. And maybe that balance too, between tough and soft, which is, you know, again, a really nice contrast that happens through the book.
Yes. Finding the part of you that perhaps you want to be more than the other part.
So let's talk just a little about Rennie's dad. I mean, he's a shadowy monster. He's almost not real. You know, you almost see him as the monster under the bed.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess for her, because her situation with her mother was became quite, well, I would guess you would really call it mental ill over the whole paranoia of waiting for this guy to turn up again. And so in some senses Rennie had almost discounted her father and thought that her mother was the one to really fear, and of course until he turned up when she was 15 and it all went to hell.
So tell me about the cover, because it's so scary. What is that lock?
What's a lock? Well, I think I guess a lock represents a secret in some ways, and I am obviously somebody else designed this, when my publisher first showed it to me, we both really liked the lock because a lock represents so many things, and of course is a lock in the book as well. And without giving that part of the story away, there is a lock, and it kind of all fed together. So yeah, I really like it as well.
Yeah, and I guess metaphorically, the lock is on Reddy's heart, and maybe on Hayden's too.
Yeah, definitely, and perhaps a few other people in that story as well. Certainly, you know, her sister, and her father to some degree as well. And so in some ways, it represents a whole lot of things within that story. The same as the title represents a whole lot of things within the story. Originally, the term of blood secret had been a reference to the blood that was spilled in the car park and what is the secrets behind that. And, of course, it is about that. But so many people that I've spoken to about it say, oh, but it's all about, you know, relationships and, you know, families. And, yes, and it is about all of those things as well.
Yes. I mean, I gave it to my mother, actually, to read after I'd read it. And she said, oh, I can't read that. It's far too scary looking. Because it's a scary lock. And then within two minutes or 3 minutes into the story, she said, oh, no, I have to keep reading. I've got to find out what happened to Max. So.
I love to hear that. Thank you.
So did you struggle with any of the characters more than others? You did tell me about Rennie's remoteness. Were any of the characters really difficult?
Ren mostly, and making the father seem, as you say, you know, you call him the monster under the bed, and to make him seem real was quite difficult. I worried at times that I was taking him too far into the violent side, that it wouldn't be believable, and then trying to maintain him as a realistic, that was, you know, even though he really only appears at the end, he is a character all the way through that. That was quite difficult. I suppose for me, the most difficult thing, most of the other characters worked kind of quite well, came alive on their own. The bad guy, without giving that away, he was a difficult piece of work, but he proved to be that in the end as well. The most difficult part was splitting up the two point of views of Rennie and Max. I ended up writing those as two separate pieces because they don't really connect. And at the end, the process of piecing them together throughout the story really nearly did my head in. It basically took over my office, and I had seen spread out all over the floor of my office, and I spent maybe a week down there just sliding bits of paper in and out and trying to work out how that was all going to fit together.
Ah, oh, yeah, I've heard that Game of Thrones was written that way too, as consecutive stories, which were then broken up afterwards.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. I mean, when I was writing Max, in the other books that I've written with two points of view, I've always written them consecutively, you know, each scene one following the other. But because they didn't interconnect, I found it too difficult to work out what each of them were doing. So I ended up writing them as two separate stories and keeping in mind where it might go. But the most difficult thing in the end of that was I had much more of Max at the first half of the book, and then my sister suggested that perhaps I keep him away for a while, which I thought was quite a good idea. But, of course, that meant rewriting a lot of his story and feeding it in further into the story. So, yeah, that was really complicated.
Your settings are always local ones. Why is that?
I actually made a conscious decision when I started writing crime that I was going to set it in regional areas in Australia and in places that I knew and really liked and thought would kind of work really well. I had been reading a lot of American crime fiction. It always struck me that that they often wrote in regional areas to where they live. And in Australia, at the time when I was writing thrillers, a lot of the crime novels were set either Sydney or Melbourne, you know, an iconic outback setting. And I thought, well, you know, I think that we can do a regional setting here as well. And it was a good way of showing off where I live because I really like that in The Hunter. And at the time, I really had no idea whether that first book would ever get published. So, yeah, I just went with what I thought. It was set out in Dungold, which is close to where I live, and it's a place where I've been on weekends. So it just seemed like the perfect place to start that. And I also think a lot of readers have some experience of regional areas in one way or another. If they haven't lived there, they've been on holidays there, or they've driven through it, and so it's something that they can imagine. And my second book was set in Newcastle, but not what most people would think of as Newcastle, as either the industry or the beach, but, you know, the suburban setting in a neighbourhood and a small kind of set of small business area. And I thought whether people lived in regional or city areas, they would recognise that kind of thing. So that's kind of my thinking behind it. And with the lake, I had always wanted to write something on the lake, and the fact that that initial road rage incident had happened right there on the shores of that, I just kind of I thought it was a really good time to do it.
Absolutely, and the settings are so real. I guess do you just go outside and walk around? Do you find if you need some setting that you can just look?
Sometimes, Most of my stories have a definite setting that kind of I decide it needs to be there, and I kind of recreate the real setting into what I need, and then of course I have to give it a new name. With Blood City, I really wanted to set it on the lake, and I had some ideas in mind of some of the small communities on the western side of the lake there rather than the really busy ones, and something that was close to the expressway because she needs to go back and forth off the expressway. And I have a friend who lives in Wanji, and she offered to show me around there, and we did the whole, you know, walking tour around Wanji, and I saw the local shops and the buildings on the water's edge there, and the point with the park and the gun placements, and I really felt that that was just a really great place to set that. And of course I redesigned it and built roads and moved parks, and I moved the gun emplacements as well, and of course then I had to give it another name. But to me it really is the lake. You know, I've spent 20 years living on the lake and it is beautiful, and I wanted to be able to kind of talk about how beautiful it is and also talk about the creepy, scary places around the lake.
Yeah, there's tunnels. Are they all real?
Yeah, well, no, I there aren't tunnels. I tunnels. They are fictional tunnels. But I did speak to a local engineer, and he did say, yes, it was possible to have tunnels there, but the gun emplacements are there.
Okay. Yeah, wonderful. I mean, I was tempted to just go and have a look because I thought, oh, what a great setting.
Yeah.
It's scary.
The gun emplacements themselves are really creepy. I went up there with my friend, and she said, let's go down inside them. And there is a bunker underneath, and the walls were just, like, matted with spider webs, which were revolting. And when we got inside, the one that we went into had been swept clean and laid with, like, big branches, you know, big leafy branches, and a fireplace had been set up in the centre. So there were obviously people using it regularly or living in it or sleeping in it or whatever. Yeah, it was really creepy and eerie. And of course, that's a really good place to put the book.
Yeah, absolutely. What a perfect setting. So you've spoken in other interviews about the dreaded plot trap, that place where the plot falls apart and you've got to come back and fix it. Did that happen with Blood Secret?
Yeah, it did. I think the Blood Secret was more plot-driven than the other stories I had written, and I had various things in my mind about what needed to happen, and the middle of it was a big falling apart moment. I had all things happening, and they were in the wrong order, and I kind of got to the halfway mark and thought, no, they're all in the wrong order, and I'm not sure how this should happen and how this bit needs to play out. And basically the thinking was, if I do this now, then I can't do that later, and this has to happen here, but then that can't happen there. So, yeah, it was about 6 weeks in the middle of basically just fiddling around in the scenes that I'd written until I finally decided to kind of backtrack and rewrite them and move, shuffle things around, and it started to fall into place then. So, yeah, it was always a scary moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me about Already Dead. Your titles are all two words and quite scary. Do you stick with that formula, or has it just worked out that way?
No, I actually really like the two-word thing. The Beyond Fear was came to me midway through that book, and I really liked that, and then I used those words in the book. Scared Yet came to me as well, and then after that I just really liked that two-word thing. I thought that was kind of a thing that might label me as well, and so I like the two-word thing, and yeah, I like to make it sound a little bit creepy in the title. I think it says something about the story then. The title Already Dead for my new one is actually a phrase that's used at the end of the first chapter in that book, so it kind of, and by a character that is a very violent and confused man, but actually doesn't make it all that way through the books. It's kind of about him and why he was called that, or why he used that phrase. So it says a little bit about that character, but once again, I really like that title that says a whole bunch of things. And the main character, her name is Miranda Jack, and her husband was killed hit and run a year before the story is set, so it's kind of about that as well, and her process through it. The story starts with a carjacking, and she's stuck in a car with this crazy man and a gun about 2 hours, and so it's about how that plays out and how she deals with that afterwards. And she is a former journalist.
asks lots of questions. It's kind of a natural state for her, and she asks too many questions, and it starts to get dangerous.
Tempted already.
Yay!
I do love, I love the way Blood Secret has a, you know, a dual meaning as well, so that, you know, obviously we think of the blood that's spilled, but of course the blood, the genetic blood as well.
Yes, I really like that kind of play on words, that you start reading the book and you think maybe the title means this, but maybe it means that as well, and yeah, I like that.
Do you always start with the title? Is it in place before you begin?
No, not at all. With Beyond Fear, I wasn't published at that stage, and I had written most of the book, and I needed to, I decided to pitch it to an agent at a conference, one of those horrible face-to-face, nerve-wracking pitches, and I needed a title for the book. So I kind of brainstormed it out and came up with Beyond Fear, and once I had that, I could then use it in the book. And once again, it was that double meaning, what happens when... what happens past the and what happens, you know, you're driven to that point, and also what happens when you actually don't fear anymore. And so that book is kind of about that. And so I sold that on a two-book contract, and the publisher was asking me, did I have another book? And I didn't. I had an idea about a stalker, and I just came up with the title Scared Yet with a question mark. The publisher loved the title and the question mark, so I kind of had that title right from the start. And with Blood Secret, I had been offered another two-book contract, and the publisher wanted to know what the first book would be about. And so I pitched a story to them, and I obviously needed a title for that, and came up with Blood Secret. And then the one that I'm writing now, Already Dead, I did actually start with a different title. First time I started with a different title, and I had to change it. But I am hoping that this book will be the start of a series of sorts, and so I kind of needed to pitch that also to my publisher, so I really wanted a title for that. So it's kind of a weird process.
That's a new thing for you too, isn't it, a series?
Yeah, that's right. I guess in some ways I'd always wanted to write a series of some sort. I'm not interested in doing a police procedural, and I didn't really want to do a private investigator, so this character, Miranda Jack, is a former journalist, a question asker by nature, and is kind of drawn into investigations or unknown things almost by reluctance or accidents at times. So kind of using it like that. I had always wanted, you know, to... This character, Miranda Jack, has been in my mind quite a long time, but I guess also as a writer there's a certain lure to having characters that are already established and places that are already established, that you don't need to recreate an entire world with an entire population of characters every time you write a book.
That's true, and I suppose if you're doing a series you don't get that, I don't know if you get it, but I imagine you would get that just slight sense of sadness when you finished about just leaving a character that you've come to kind of love and know.
Yes, there is that. Yeah, there is that. There is a kind of sadness, and it does take a while to let go of them sometimes. So I guess with the series you don't have that, and I am hoping that I can write other thrillers in between the series, so it's not all just Forevermore Miranda Jack, because I think that would drive me nuts as well to have the same character and never actually develop another one. So we'll see how that plays out.
Oh, well, good luck with it. And that's all we have time for today. But, Jay, so good to talk to you. And listeners, don't forget to tune in next month when we chat with Brendan Shanahan, author of The Secret Life of the Gold Coast. Bye for now.